Welcome back to STM Live, everybody. My name is Aaron. I'm still your host. You've heard me say that many dozens of times if you've been listening to this show for a while, but I get to do a couple other cool things over here at Small Town Monsters, and one of them is host a new podcast that is coming out Monday, March the 25th, and it is called House of Monsters. We talked about this show a little bit on here. If you keep an eye on our social media, you can see some previews before it comes out, but that show airs Monday. And this is the first time we're making this announcement. So you got lucky. You did get lucky. You just made a good choice by tuning in. Speaking of podcasts, we have a new episode of The Lore You Know featuring Mr. Ron Murphy, which is available right now on your favorite podcasting platform, possibly the one you're listening to this show on if you're tuning in for the audio version. You can see Ron in our upcoming show, UFOs Revisited, as well as the seminal classic American Werewolves and other Small Town Monsters productions that would take me way too long to name. And one more quick announcement before we get to tonight's guest. There is a new installment of UFOs. On the Trail of UFOs, available to squad members, aka YouTube channel members, right now. And the worldwide version will be available on Sunday. So we are dealing with some time constraints tonight, folks. Today's show will run a little bit shorter than usual. So without further ado, to make the best use of our time, please welcome back my friend and colleague, Mr. Eli Watson. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling fantastic. I'm doing another episode of this show with you, and I'm seeing a bunch of our friends in the chat here.
Yes.
Yeah, good to see everybody. As always, folks, be sure to drop your questions and comments in the chat. We'll do our best to get to everyone, even with our limited time frame tonight. So, latest episode of Road to Discovery has been out for a few days now. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a lot of positive buzz about it. How are you feeling about kind of the state of the series right now? We're four episodes in?
Six.
This is six?
This is episode six, yes.
Oh, I might have some missing time. So we're six episodes in. How are you feeling?
I'm good. Because there's a lot. Because this series was originally supposed to be a limited run of six episodes, and it has since expanded. And so it's going to keep going, and I'm not sure for how much longer. It still will be a limited series, I think, with a potential revival a few years down the line, but it's not going to continue past 2024, that's for sure. Okay. And to me, it's exciting because we've kind of reached, at this point, six episodes in, we're reaching like a midpoint. And it's interesting to me because it's like I'm making a big movie, like the biggest Sasquatch documentary ever made. And it's at this point that, and I'm super proud of this episode because it's really touching on what I want what I wanted the show to be about, what I went into the show making. I'm asking those questions of, why do you look for Bigfoot? You know, if Bigfoot wasn't real, would you still look for it? Those types of questions were the heart and soul of why I even wanted to make this show. And I knew the Olympic Project guys were going to be able to handle that line of questioning. And, you know, not everyone in the Bigfoot world can handle that. But I'm fortunate that the Olympic Project guys are so awesome and that they gave such candid answers that I think I was able to make something really special. And I'm excited for the next episode even too, because I dive into this question with other people and everyone gives all these different answers of why they're involved with what they're doing. And I think to me, that's what makes this show so different from anything else I've done. You know, maybe the OP guys, they don't like to talk about themselves very much, but
no, they don't.
I got them to open up.
I mean that as a compliment. Like, you know, they're not big on self-promotion. They're just doing the work and they're very committed to it. And they're very genuine people. And that comes through in the conversations I've had with them. But, you know, it comes through even more in this episode because you do have these prolonged interviews where they're sharing these experiences.
Yeah, I think as an interviewer, it's probably my greatest work. Because I've been talking about this a lot lately. Every person's like a project. And I'm always aiming to get people to relax in front of the camera and be candid. That's my style. I like that. I like being able to peer into what this person's actually like. And it's everything. You know, in order to get to that point where you're sitting down in front of the camera and you're doing that, it's not just the line of questions leading up to those more candid questions. It's when you first reach out to that person, when you're hanging out with that person before the interview, all of that stuff. And then even after, making sure that everything's okay, making sure that you know, I'm not just getting you to open up so then I can like use your tears for clickbait, you know?
It's okay,
like,
bye.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm really proud of this episode and specifically the second half, because I think it really gets to what I wanted this show to be about. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that was a great answer. It really comes through. Like it's really, every episode of this series has been really genuine, but this one is kind of special in a way because it is a lot more personal. It's not as much about the data, and you know, I really connected with it. I think a lot of folks did. Looking at some of the comments, I can see that is definitely the case. Michael Fetterman, I don't know why it took me a second to read your last name, Michael. Apologies. I live about 12 to 15 miles from the Olympic Project. Very interesting. So if you have any interesting stories, feel free to reach out to us. Jasmine May With, not sure who that is. matching cryptid campfire shirts. Let's go with about 8 O's. Yeah. Those of you listening on audio may not know that Eli and I are wearing matching shirts this evening. In different colors with the same design. It wasn't actually planned, which is why I'm so glad we got to talk about it. So
I know. It's great.
Thank you, Jasmine. Great to see you. Our friend SoCal Squatch says, does Eli like honky tonks? And I believe that is a vernacular for a party or a hoedown, if I'm not mistaken.
I could be kind wrong. Of. Yeah. I tend to like honky tonks. And SoCal Squatch would know because the last honky tonk I was at was with him. So,
oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, oh, good. I'm supposed to send him videos. I'll do that later.
Hang on, guys. The rest of the show is just, just us waiting for Eli. Dylan Kopp says Eli is a humble legend. That's a really nice thing to say. I would agree with that.
I appreciate it, but I'm not a legend. And I'm not that humble.
Oh, shucks, man. You sure are. Our friend Michael Tovar, squad member, tuning in from Austin, Texas. Great to see you, Michael. I do also see our squad members, Scott and J.E. Roberts, as well as Chris Blaylock in the audience. So hello to all of you. And Chris has a question for us, which I almost missed. There it is. Hi, guys. Eli, do you have any in-person events coming up? Love the series. Great question, Chris. What in-person events does Eli have coming up?
I believe the only upcoming event I'm going to is Monster Fest in June.
Yeah.
And that's towards the end of June, I think. What is that? June 28th and 29th.
28th Thanks. And 29th. Our friend Scott asks a conjoining question, will Eli and Aaron be at Monster Fest? And the answer is yes. So
we will.
Oh, wait, no, that was a statement. Scott's coming in reminding me of the things I forgot to say at the bottom or the start of the show. That's not a question. Eli and Aaron will be at Monster Fest, and we will see the premiere of Eli's latest film, Cursed Waters. Yes, we will and you will. Sorry, guys. I'm a little, I'm reading too fast tonight, I guess.
Take it easy.
I don't know what's going on, man. Gosh. J.E. Roberts says, every episode with the Olympic Project has been truly interesting. Looking forward to more. So that's actually a question I had, Eli. You mentioned the series will go on at least through this year. Can you tell us, or do you know how many more episodes we have coming? Is that a secret? Are we not sure yet?
We're not sure. There's going to be at least two more. At least two more. But potential of a third, I'm not exactly sure. At least two, possibly more.
Okay.
And, you know, I love this series a lot. It's probably my favorite thing I've ever done. And I would love it to keep going. But it's like one of those things is if it just kept going, it would lose its specialness, you know, and it would get watered down. And I've had this conversation with the OP guys, and it's like the other thing that separates this show from some other Bigfoot content is like we're not just looking around in the woods with no results, you know. It's specifically highlighting things that they've found, you know, and it's an accumulation of what they've done over years and years and years. And now that I've covered a lot of that, it's like the last thing I want to do is just be going out in the woods and not finding anything, because that's what happens 99% of the time, which is why I'm saying it might get revived years from now, you know, depending on the results of what they find.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I don't know. Or who knows, you know, maybe they'll go out next week and find a whole new nest site. And then
that's literally like, what I was about to say. They could find another nest site any day. That's so
then,
funny.
And so then everything would change, you know? So
that's cool. So it's good to know we'll have at least a couple more coming.
Yeah.
A lot of just like super positive feedback tonight from everybody. Our friend Brenda says, Eli, you're doing a great job. I agree with that.
Thank you.
Scott says, loving what Eli is doing with this series, really repping the Olympic Project well. Glad they are getting their due. I agree 100%. It's possible that the Olympic Project gets a nod in an upcoming book from Small Town Monsters Publishing called Hunting Grounds, because they are doing stellar work. Our friend Zach Torres says, Aubrey is excited to see you on TV, Eli. You're on TV.
I'm ready for it. Wait, I think I've met Zach Torres.
I believe you
had a Squatch Fest.
I believe you have. We've talked about it on the show before.
Yes, I think I know who that is. Anyways,
yes.
I'm sorry, I missed that. You said you're including the OP in Hunting Grounds?
They get mentioned, yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's a, I don't want to give away too much, but it's a book about cryptozoology. So when you're talking about cryptozoology, you talk about people who are doing work that you think sets a precedent for how good work can be done. And I say it more eloquently in the book. I don't know what that was, said Aaron, a professional writer. But yeah. I would love to see the kind of work that the Olympic Project is doing done on some like active dog man areas. And it's possible someone is out there doing it, but there's nobody making a documentary about it right now. So
right.
We'll see. We'll see what the future brings. But, you know, I think it would be interesting. Charlie Brown asks, I probably should have answered this one sooner. Is this a talk show? Yes, it is, Charlie. This is our our weekly live stream where we discuss our most recent public YouTube release. We also talk about our theatrical releases and just kind of generally talk Bigfoot and paranormal stuff in general. So, yes.
Think of it as Late Night with Aaron Deese.
Yeah, not as late tonight or earlier today, but I'm actually liking it. I feel like I have a lot more energy than I usually do. And that's coming through as me skipping questions and not reading things before I start answering them.
Latest comment from Zach Torres. I know exactly who he is and who Aubrey is.
Fantastic. Welcome back to the show, Zach. Always good to see you. I feel like Zach asks really good questions on here from time to time as well.
What's going on? I'm suddenly cosmic.
Oh, did you look the same on my end? Oh, okay.
Okay.
Dylan Kopf has a nice compliment for us. Epic what Seth and Alex and Eli has done with and for this series, hands down my favorite. Yeah, so this series is Eli, 110% film directed, edited. But of course, Alex and Eli do Sasquatch Unearthed and Bigfoot Beyond the Trail, which are also great shows that you guys should check out, also available on this channel. But yeah, Eli is 100% the force behind The Road to Discovery. And the Olympic Project also, I guess. I guess if they weren't doing anything, there wouldn't be anything to make a documentary about. Johnny Mariner has a fun question. We were kind of talking about this a little while ago. Has there been anything new about Land Between the Lakes Dogmen? Very soon, yes. Yes, we have a film and a book centric to that topic coming out very soon. And we'll be announcing release dates for those in the coming weeks. So keep your eyes peeled for that. But yeah. All I'll say, and you can find this out with a quick Google, so I'm not giving anything away, is that activity of strange things in the Land Between the Lakes has been ongoing for many years and continues to this day. So that is something that we are excited to talk more about. Do you have anything on Land Between the Lakes, Eli? Anything?
There will be, I think this has been announced, but there will be a Sasquatch Unearthed centered on LBL. I filmed when we were there and I will be editing. I don't know when that's coming out yet.
So,
but it will be coming out this year. So get ready for that.
Yeah, so stay tuned. Great question, Johnny. Thank you. Land Between the Lakes has been coming up a lot lately. So I'm excited that Alex and I have talked about this on the show a little bit, but I'm excited that we kind of have this body of work focusing on the LBL from different angles, you know, looking at Sasquatch, right. Looking at Dogman. We've got some books. We've got some films. I'm excited about that. When speaking of Dogman, our friend Michael Tovar says, Eli, rewatched Werewolves of the North Woods. Any thoughts in diving back into Dogmen or werewolf stuff? That's a great question. Werewolves of the North Woods was episode 14?
Nine.
Oh, nine. Wow. Bad. Nine of Mysteries and Monsters.
Yeah. Possibly. I'm not sure. I said what I wanted to say about Dogman in that episode. If I were to do anything else on Dogman, it would have to be, I'm not sure what it would be on. Because I mean the Dogman Triangle covered that whole area, I think, very well. Obviously the Land Between the Lakes Hunting Grounds is coming out soon. So I mean, I don't, those story, I'm not going to rehash those stories basically. So if that's something fine. Comes up, maybe, yeah, but we'll see.
Someone asked me recently, I believe it was Jeremiah over at Bigfoot Society. He was like, are you going to do anything after you're done with the Dogman stuff in the Bigfoot world? And I basically said, I'm going to misquote myself, but it's a public interview. But I was like, no, because other people are doing it better. Like, there's nothing for me to do. I specifically mentioned what you've been doing with Road to Discovery.
Well, thanks. But I mean, that's how I feel about Dogman, right? Is like, I'm not, you're already doing so much work in that. And I say that not lightly, because the Dogman community is full of people who, let's just put it this way, there's not a whole lot of Dogman researchers.
There are a lot of enthusiasts. There are a lot of very enthusiastic people. And there's a lot of information being shared, but its validity is ambiguous.
Right. And so, the only person who's kind of doing anything what I would call research is you, actually. So,
well, there's also a show where you talk about this topic at length called The Man Wolf Files.
Carrick.
Actually, you can hear quite a bit about Eli's research and thoughts on the Dogman topic in The Man Wolf Files Season 2, which is currently airing. I might also be in there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll be talking more about werewolves and Dogmen here very soon. I should have said this at the top of the hour, but of course you can get American Werewolves 2 right now on Blu-ray DVD over at smalltownmonsters.com. So
How come I don't have one of those?
This is actually my Kickstarter copy. So maybe you lost yours?
Where's mine? I donated a whole $5.
You got to ask Courtney about that, man. Contact us at smalltownmonsters.com. Oh, man.
I want to say something. Rebecca Slick is here in the chat.
She is. I was getting ready to shout that out. Hello, Rebecca Slick. Great to see you. Rebecca is one of the core members of the Olympic Project and has been featured in many episodes of this show.
Like, Rebecca, I wanted to say this because I don't know if I've said this fully or as verbalized as I'm about to, but in many ways, Rebecca is integral to the series because without her filming so much over the past few years, like, she is basically the documentarian of the Olympic Project. And she's been gracious enough to let me use all of that footage, years worth of footage in this series. So a lot of the footage I didn't even film myself. Like, it's, and I think that's part of what makes it so unique is that she just films to document what they're doing. They're not, I mean, that footage hasn't been released anywhere. She's not putting it out on a YouTube channel or anything like that. So it's like, she's just filming just to film. So it's all, again, very, very candid stuff. And so I don't think this series could be what it is without Rebecca's contributions. So
I agree. I agree. Throw those clapping hand emojis in the chat for Rebecca. But it's so cool because it's not just what you're able to film on the ground. You do have this archival stuff going back, you know, that we otherwise wouldn't get to see. So shout out to Rebecca for sure. I do see a ton of, because when I can mentally handle it, I moderate the comments on YouTube. And I do see a lot of really positive comments with people just like, so good to see Rebecca out there. You know, love hearing from her. That's a common thought. So,
well, she'll be featured a lot in the next episode.
Oh, stay tuned.
Well, in case you didn't notice, this episode was completely absent of like Chris Spencer and Rebecca. It was Shane, Todd, and Derek. So yeah,
I got to the end and I was like, something's missing.
What a Chris Spencer.
Oh, Tyler's here. Tyler Hall says the boys. I think that's us.
Who's him? Who's Tyler?
Tyler Hall, director of, oh God, I keep getting the book and the Phantom Lights, goodness, and maker of the really cool trailer for tonight's episode that we saw at the top of the hour. So shout out to Tyler. You guys will be hearing more from Mr. Tyler Hall very soon.
Huh?
I didn't tell Eli that I was going to say any of that stuff. Scott is here and says, would love to see the Olympic Project folk at Monster Fest in Canton. That would be great if we can get them over there. I don't know if we can get them out of the woods for that long.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It might be too late for that. I
don't know. It's always next year. Always next year. Vincent says, I love this. Eli's work gives me a break from the world, and for that, I thank you. Smiling emoji. That's a great sentiment, Vincent. Thank you.
Thanks, Vincent. That's appreciate that. Making it gives me a break from the world.
That's the tagline for season two. Mark has a question for us. Mark Morris for Eli. After this series wraps up, what would you choose to work on next, either with STM or independently? Don't leave us, bro.
I'm not planning on it. So, I guess I can say this. The next project I'm going to work on will be that Sasquatch Unearthed LBL stuff, which will be like a micro season of like 2 to 3 episodes.
Cool.
And then as Road to Discovery begins to phase out, I will be returning to Mysteries and Monsters.
I'm excited about this.
I'm excited too. I guess, I don't know, actually. What's crazy about Mysteries and Monsters is that I can do anything on the table.
Yeah.
And so it's right now, I still have footage from my first round of filming that show that I haven't used. And I also have leads on a bunch of stories that I was pursuing before season one came to an end. And I'm kind of at a point where it's like, well, I don't necessarily have to follow those things up. I can choose different things. So that's where I'm at right now, is what am I going to talk about next? And so it's kind of like, that's the most exciting part of any project, is like, ooh, yeah, it's an idea. And then you start like outlining it. And I don't know about you, but my process in everything I've done besides Road to Discovery, it's always been like, I was slightly disappointed with the project.
I swing back and forth. There are days where I feel like, you know, the Dogman Triangle is the greatest thing I've ever created. And then there are days where I'm like, this is terrible. You should have done everything differently. So I feel
yeah. That. So, and it's like, I know, because I've completely switched gears. Road to Discovery is completely different from Mysteries and Monsters, but I feel like in order to get back into the zone of Mysteries and Monsters, I'm going to have to watch it again. And that's what I'm really nervous about. Like, cause I really don't like seeing myself on screen. In fact, again, one of those things, it's like, looking in hindsight, it's like, I wish I wasn't on screen. But I made that decision, so I have to keep it going. And so, you know, Road to Discovery was nice because I get to hide behind my microphone and I'm never on camera. And yeah. So
yeah,
I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to watch 9 hours of me talking on camera. This is going to be fun.
I've heard Seth say something similar. I remember one of the first film shoots I was on with him. He was like, the great thing about this is I don't have to be on camera. You're just going to be, he's like, you've seen our other films, right? And I was like, yes. He was like, you're going to basically be me for this one. So I don't have to be on camera at all. And it's funny because now you're saying something very similar. I think it's neat.
Yeah.
our friend Ashley Hilt is here. Hey, Ashers. Good to see you. Hey, y'all. Loved Mysteries and Monsters, genuinely. Actually seeing a lot of love for Mysteries and Monsters in the comments right now. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you guys for all the love for Mysteries and Monsters. I am very proud of that show as well. But to me, nothing will beat Road to Discovery. Not for a long time. So Mysteries and Monsters is a totally different show, and I nailed what I was going for, in my opinion. So that's all I have to say about that.
Well, we're getting more of both. That's the good thing. We don't have to pick. You know, it's not a Simpsons and actually, I guess it is a Simpsons and Futurama situation because those shows ran parallel and I guess technically still do. So, yeah, it's like a Simpsons and Futurama situation. We're getting both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did a complete reversal on that analogy. God. Brenda has a fun question. This is a fun one. Eli, which do you like best? Bigfoot, Dogman, etc. Out of all of them, do you have a favorite?
I guess Sasquatch would be my favorite. And this might be a controversial thing to say right here, right now, but I think it's because Sasquatch has the most probability of being real.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, I do like... There are certain lake monsters I feel like are definitely real. Ogopogo, Champ. And I don't know enough about Loch Ness to really make an opinion about it, but those definitely aquatic cryptids for sure could definitely be real. Because I feel like with those, you're working with a lot of the similar circumstances you are with Sasquatch. You know, people look at a lake and they're like, oh, well, nothing could hide in there. It's a confined body of water. Mm-hmm. Well, you're looking at a lake, in the case of Lake Okanagan, it's 90 miles long, 2,000 feet deep, and 3 miles wide. And you're looking for something that's 60 feet long at the most, with a lot of reports being smaller. The only way you would be able to find that is if you were able to see the entirety of the lake all at once, which you're not able to do. So you're looking for a small object that moves around in a very large body of water.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, it's the same with Sasquatch. You know, people like to say that, oh, we would have found one by now. Well, the woods are huge. You're talking about looking for, you know, some of the more conservative estimates of Sasquatch are populations are like 300 Sasquatch in total in the state of Washington. Well, how much woods are there in the state of Washington? There's a lot. And you're talking about a small population that's constantly moving around. They don't, they hang out in the same general areas, but even if they hang out, you know, let's just say there's five of them that hang out in a 10 square mile radius in the woods. You're looking for five of them in 10 square miles in the woods. The only way you would be able to find them definitively is if you were able to see all of that all at once, but you can't. You're limited. You know, and that's the same, you know, that's how I feel about lake monsters too. Anyways, that's my point. Hope you, if you disagree. Okay.
Well, this comes up on the show a lot, but we forget how big the world is. You know, we have Google Earth and we have maps and we pretty much know what the globe looks like. Like I can have it as the background on my watch right now, but we forget just how big that space is relative to our perspective. Like if you're talking about 10 square miles, that's still a tremendous amount of space, even though on a map, it's just a tiny, tiny little dot. So, I, you know, just to corroborate what you're saying, not that you need me to do that.
No, I'm glad.
You kind of touched on something that takes us to our next question from our friend Samwise Gamgee, who's taking a much-deserved break from his trip to Mordor. Sorry, man, sorry for that. It was too easy. I'm sorry. Good to see you, Samwise Gamgee. But he asks, does the Olympic group have any estimate on the Squatch carrying capacity of the peninsula, 25, 50, 100? So going back to the population. It's a great question.
Yeah, I don't think, at least from my discussions with the Olympic Project, they don't have any specific population estimates. Where I got the number 300 for the state of Washington comes from Jeff Meldrum's estimation of Bigfoot or Bigfoot populations. And I think it correlates with bear population because you're looking at an animal that occupies the same ecological niche, you know, a large omnivore. So you're looking at bear, and I think it's for every 100 bear, there's one Sasquatch or something like that. And so that's a rough estimate. Of course, we don't know because, you know, there's definitely situations where it's like that doesn't necessarily apply. Like the state of Ohio, I think, has one black bear in it or five black bear in it. But so according to certain theories, you know, that would mean there are no Sasquatch in the state of Ohio, but we know that's not true because Matt Moneymaker recorded the Ohio Howl in Ohio. Seth Breedlove saw one just a few years ago
in the Bigfoot project. Yeah.
Right. So I think, you know, it's not perfect, but I think it's a good jumping off point. And that's what's interesting. You know, even Southern California doesn't have grizzly bear anymore, but we do have black bear. There's reports of Sasquatch here. But how would the lack of, you know, grizzly bear were hunted down here in Southern California? Sasquatch weren't hunted down to extinction. So what would that do for Sasquatch populations? I don't know.
Yeah.
And so the Olympic Peninsula, I know it's extremely, extremely dense out there, extremely mountainous. And in fact, the very first episode of Road to Discovery touches on this is It's extremely difficult to traverse. And in fact, the main road goes all the way around the peninsula. It just goes on the outskirts. And basically, if you want to get into it, you have to hike in. Meaning there's a lot of unexplored territory, so potentially meaning that there could be more Sasquatch out there, or I still wouldn't put it very high.
Hmm. Yeah.
Maybe 25.
And it may be less about bears as it is just like relative to the local wildlife, because we have Sasquatch sightings across the map, but
right.
You know, North America, if we're just talking about North America, for example, has a ton of biodiversity, and there are species that we see here that we don't see over here, and you know, but pretty much every state has a significant chunk of Sasquatch sightings. So,
well, great. The other thing is too, they wouldn't need, I don't think they necessarily need to have a whole lot of Sasquatch, you know. You look, apes live in small groups, especially orangutans. They live in small clusters, you know. So if Sasquatch are anything like orangutans or gorillas, which they display behaviors like each of those, they wouldn't be living in groups of like 30 of them. They would be mm-hmm. living in groups of maybe 3 to 4,
mm-hmm.
you know? So we're not talking about a whole lot. And not only that, you know, orangutans and gorillas have large territories, and you're talking about an ape that's potentially larger than that. They would probably have even bigger territories. So I wouldn't put my money on there being very many of them.
Really interesting food for thought.
Yeah.
I love questions like that. Thank you, Samwise. Much appreciated. Quite a few questions in the queue here. We're coming up near the end of our night, so we'll get through a few of these. Brenda asks, are you and Alex going to hook up together again in the future? Actually, we get this question a lot, and I have a standard answer for it. Alex and Eli are both very busy working on separate projects, so hopefully we can get them on a plane together again sometime, but I don't know.
Even when Alex and I did work together on Beyond the Trail, I don't think we were ever on the same plane, so.
Oh, wow. So that's just a whole new project I've set out.
Yeah.
Courtney's like, what is he doing? What's wrong with him? Into the Night, Bigfoot and Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm going to have to check that out when we're done tonight. How's everyone doing? I'm doing pretty good. Are you doing all right, Eli?
I'm doing all right. I'm ready to answer some questions, man.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Awesome. We have a couple kind of back-to-back comments from Lee Gosling that I thought were really cool and interesting. Hello from Scottish Highlands, where there is a small clan of Neanderthal-type hairy beings that are very elusive. That's cool that I'm going to have to look into. I didn't know that. And this came through when we were talking about the size of lakes and stuff. Lee says, I live near Loch Ness, well, 30 miles away. That's still really close compared to us. Loch Ness is deeper than the North Sea in places as a fault line. It is seen more now with a road around it. Could be a family of plesiosaur. So interesting. It's possible that you can learn more about the Loch Ness monster in an upcoming episode of House of Monsters. I don't know. Keep an eye on your podcast feed. I don't know. But very interesting, Lee. Thank you for sharing that. You'll have to tell us more about Loch Ness sometime. Sarah Bear 92, very cool username, asks, Eli, was there a favorite spot you've been to through all of your adventures and why?
I don't know. There's been a lot of places, and it's all for the same reasons. Just for the beauty of the natural habitat. Northern California springs to mind, like Bluff Creek area. Spots in Alaska, for sure. Where me and Alex hiked to in Utah, up in the mountains there, in the High Uintas. Those are the three that spring to mind, because they're just so... The scenery was just so epic. You know, and for me, it's like, I don't know. Maybe I'm a terrible Bigfoot researcher, but it's like, you have to enjoy the nature that you're in, you know? So it's like, I'm not sometimes you just put your pack down and sit there for a minute. So,
well, Sarah actually had another comment a little while before she asked that question that said, you all are so inspiring to get out in the field, learn more about wildlife, and keep that spark of belief that something else is out there. So I think that's a really beautiful sentiment, man. Just get out in nature, enjoy where you are. Yeah. You're not going to discover Bigfoot every time you go into the woods, but
no.
Yeah. Great question. Great comment, Sarah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Pam With asks, Eli, Jay wants me to ask, what about the Chambers creature? I don't know what the Chambers creature is.
Yeah. Chambers, Ohio.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about Ohio earlier.
Yeah. Chambers, Ohio. It was like a hippo like creature seen in the, I think it was like a, what is it? Like a sanitation plant, but kind of like a, where they process fecal matter.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like this hippo-like creature.
Sewage processing
facility
or something. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know much about it, though. But I should know more about it because I did talk about it on Cryptid Campfire a while back.
Cryptid Campfire, the hit podcast, available now on your favorite podcasting platform. Join Eli Watson, Jasmine Maywith, and Alex Daikaiju as they dig into the history of monsters. It fell apart for me, but no, it's a great show. You guys should check it out.
Jasmine got it. It's a water treatment facility.
Water treatment facility.
There yeah, it was like a hippo-like creature with like six or eight legs.
Okay. That's fun. I love those one-off cryptids.
I think there was like one major sighting and then a few more dubious claims after. And it was employees of the water treatment facility that saw this thing. So
a water beast. I don't know.
Water. Treatment the water beast. Horse.
Water horse. Water treatment horse. Boy, very interesting. We'll look into that one. Miss me. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name. Asks, have you ever seen Bigfoot work with Dogman as far as hunting goes? And then asks a moment before, do you know of any Bigfoot? Sometimes when they're hunting, have you heard of anyone talking about them with Dogman? So I've heard one report I would consider credible involving Bigfoot and Dogman being in proximity to each other. I don't know that they could be said to be working together just because there's not enough information available. I've heard conjecture about that in some comments, but kind of like with other topics that come up on this show, sometimes I've yet to see convincing correlating eyewitnesses that seem to support the notion that they have a cooperative relationship. They seem to show up in similar areas. Like a lot of places that are thick with Dogman sightings are also inundated with a lot of Sasquatch activity. But I think that can be explained due to reasons that we don't necessarily have time to go into tonight. What do you think, Eli?
I've only heard that from Martin Groves.
That's who I was talking about.
Yeah. Oh, sorry to spoil it out, but
no. Yeah.
I mean, that's the only person I've heard that from. Other than that, no.
Yeah.
It's like the whole Bigfoot UFO thing. There's only one report that I know of that ties the two directly together, and that comes from Stan Gordon in 1973. On the Chestnut Ridge, a UFO lands in a field, and it's a father and his two sons who see it. Two Sasquatch walk out of the woods with glowing red eyes. Father, who has his hunting rifle with them, shoots at one of them. They retreat back into the woods, and then the UFO disappears. It doesn't take off. It disappears. And then the cops show up, and they find like burn marks in the field from where this thing landed. And I mean, that's it. That's the strongest case, I guess, report that would tie the two Bigfoot and UFOs together. But there's only one. Mm-hmm. Out of all the reports, and everything else is like, oh, I was out looking for Bigfoot and I saw a UFO. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Out of all the reports of Bigfoot and out of all the reports of Dogmen, how many times are they seen together? How many times are they seen working together? I don't know.
Yeah.
I would venture to say not very many.
And the resources that we need to cross-reference reports in a reasonable amount of time, you know, in order to find and identify and look for some patterns and correlations there, I don't think those resources exist right now, unfortunately.
Right.
There's a lot of great Bigfoot reporting sites and a lot of resources and books where you can get a whole lot of data really quickly, but that doesn't really exist for Dogman yet. So it's one of those kind of question marks where we do hear about it, but we just don't have enough. So great question. I think we have time for one more question before we wrap tonight. Yeah, and I think it's a great one to close with. Michael Tovar asks, Eli, what's your preference to do research in daytime or night? Pros and cons of each.
I guess my preference is in the daytime. If you're going to see something, it's probably going to be during the day, as that's when visibility is much higher. Night. I'm going to address the pros and cons of nighttime research first, and then I'll go back to day. I think the pros are, you know, the pros of doing stuff at night, especially if you're doing something like having a campfire, is, especially in the case with Sasquatch, and if it's an ape, it's going to be curious like all the other apes. And you having a fire and playing music and doing campfire things is more likely to draw them in out of curiosity. Cons, lower visibility. I mean, I suppose you could catch them on a thermal, which people have done a couple times in the past. That's what I would say, pros and cons of nighttime research. But daytime is interesting because if you look at things like the Patterson-Gimlin film, that was filmed in the day. You look at Paul Freeman's footage, which was filmed in the day. I mean, those are probably the two best pieces of video evidence, I guess, aside from like Stacy Brown's footage or Bart Catino's footage, which are both thermals. But the two best pieces of evidence come from daytime sightings. Mm-hmm. And I think, I'm not sure what the reason is for that, other than, you know, and I don't know if these things are more nocturnal or whatnot. I think they're kind of up and at it whenever they want to be, mm-hmm. like a lot of the apes. So that's what I would say. I prefer daytime because I can see stuff, you know. Don't get me wrong, I do go out at night. I have done things at night. In fact, I just got back from filming in the PNW, filming more Road to Discovery. And I think I'll be discussing some pretty wild event that happened at night.
Interesting.
Indeed.
Well, folks, that brings us to the conclusion of our available time tonight. Eli, thanks so much for penciling me in. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, penciling you. Yeah. No, thanks. Thanks for doing this. I do enjoy being on these live streams. So
yeah, man. Always great to have you. Well, thank you everybody so much for tuning in. Please come back next week for our next show with our next guest who, I'm honestly not sure who that's going to be. If you have a question, comment, suggestion, I did see someone request an interview with Eli in the chat earlier. Shoot an email to Aaron@smalltownmonsters.com. And until next time, have a great monster-filled week. I don't know. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, and Monster Fest 2 at smalltownmonsters.com.